This is Smeagol. When I'm not trying to protect my precious from wicked, tricksy hobbitses, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. They talk about many things that you filthy fanboys will love to listen to. And while you're listening, make sure you follow them on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and any social media on which you can find them. What is Twitter? Is it a bird? Is it tasty? Can I eat it? I can't eat Twitter. Smeagol is so sad. Smeagol wants to eat Twitter. Well, if I can't eat Twitter, I'll go listen to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. It will make Smeagol happy again. Happy, happy, happy! Just make sure you don't touch my precious while I'm listening.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. Part-timefanboy.com.
All right, well, let's talk about White Ash, shall we?
Sure. Yeah, I'm always happy to talk about that.
Here for, I don't want to keep you on too long because I know you're a busy, busy man, and I want to thank you for joining me on the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. I should say I have Charlie Stickney on the line, the writer and creator of White Ash. You are currently also the co-publisher at Scout Comics, correct?
Yes, those things are all correct. Although I would like to clarify, I'll add a co-creator to White Ash.
Oh, okay.
I always like to give, Connor Hughes builds the visual world.
Yeah.
There as the artist, so I give him co-creator credit on the book.
Yeah.
And Finn Cram brings a lot with the color, and he's been.
I wanted to mention the colorist. Because I was looking at the book this morning, and I think you've been on the podcast once before, and I don't know that we ever talked about the colorist. But before we talk about Finn, we should also say this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Lately, I've been really lax with my own intro on this podcast, but nobody wants to hear about me. But no, I wanted to mention Finn because I was looking through, and you also did a book called Glarian on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I always support your projects because they are like A++++ comics, in my opinion. But yeah, I noticed, not to throw you or Connor Hughes under the bus. But I, for some reason, I don't think we talked about the colorist, and we can talk about that later, but, I just wanted to give them a shout out, and I would assume it's a him.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I did not want to make that assumption in today's environment.
Yes,
but
I think it's definitely important to make sure that we're doing our best to at least use the proper pronouns.
Sure, sure. So yeah, no, White Ash is a book that's been around on Kickstarter for a while. But the reason that we're chatting about it this week is because the trade paperback is coming out through Scout Comics, correct?
Well, the trade paperback just dropped through Scout.
Oh, okay.
And in a couple of weeks, the second arc is launching through Scout Comics in comic book shops as single issues.
Yeah.
So, for your viewers or your listeners, I guess, that's probably the thing for a podcast, who don't know White Ash, the quick pitch is, it's grounded fantasy. Romeo and Juliet meets Lord of the Rings in rural Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Or the other quick pitch I like to use is imagine the guys from Supernatural got stuck in Riverdale, but rather than battling demons from hell, they had to deal with the worst of Mordor.
Yeah.
So it's grounded fantasy set in the real world. And we did. We started on Kickstarter, and then it, you know, then Scout Comics picked it up, and that led to me forming a partnership with a company where I'm now co-publisher as well. You know, to this point, White Ash came out on Kickstarter first.
Yeah.
Then it came out through Scout Comics. Going forward with the next arc, we're going to try it with single issues through Scout Comics first. Oh. And then we'll probably collect something with Kickstarter later on into a nice hardcover that matches what we did for the first volume of White Ash. So if, you know, people looking for new White Ash content, starting this November, there's going to be, you know, like the whole new next arc will be coming out through Scout Comics first. So brand new stuff coming out this November. And then probably Scout Comics has what we call our launch window. Mm-hmm. Where we put a 2-month gap between the first issue and the second issue of any series. Okay. This is all about how Diamond orders books and how retailers have to deal with it. We're basically, when the retailers have to order everything, they have to order 2 to 3 months in advance. So they don't get to see how a book does before they have to order number two.
Gotcha.
So we basically put a gap in so the retailers can see how our books are doing before they have to order the rest of the series.
Oh,
it
wow.
also gives us more of a promotional window to promote the series before it resumes. And we found at Scout that that's really sort of helped the sales from number twos, because if they can't see how the book is doing, they just artificially cut the numbers between number one and number two by at least 50%.
Yeah.
For any issue.
Yeah.
But if like number one happens to be a hit, maybe they won't do that. Gotcha. So, you know, so we've done that to help the retailers gauge. So anyway, that going back to White Ash, what that means is number one, which was scheduled to come out November 17th, which sadly looks like it's probably going to be December 1st, because we are in a crazy age of delays and, you know, printing issues and all kinds of things.
Paper shortages and that stuff.
Yeah. We're knock on wood. So far we haven't hit that one, but, it's, you know, it's tough right now for publishers, for creators to make sure their books are being delivered on time, you know, in this new world order. But so right now it's, even though it's scheduled for December, November 17th, it's looking like it's going to be about 2 weeks late and coming out on December 1st.
Okay.
And then the second issue will be coming out in February, and then the third issue will be in March, and monthly thereon after that.
Gotcha. Oh, that's, I mean, and you don't find at Scout Comics that that's maybe a risky prospect, you know, because I would imagine, I mean, I'm sure that's better for retailers, right? But I mean, I would imagine that's the sort of thing that has kept a lot of comics going, is the not knowing whether there are big orders on the first issue and, you know, like this. And then there's also the thing of like collectors, right? Where a lot of people think that the second issue sometimes is more rare than the first issue because it gets ordered less. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, look, I think you have a couple of different markets that you're playing to. One is your speculator market. And speculators are great for helping sell a lot of issues.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they're not your readers who sustain the series.
Sure.
And they show up for the first issues, for the variant covers, and again, just help the sales of a book. You know, for me, because White Ash has been around for a while, I'm much more interested in cultivating readers.
Yeah.
And I think in general, you know, speaking, you know, putting on the other hat and speaking as the publisher of Scout Comics, as much as we'd like all of our books to be the hot speculator book to help make more money for the creators, because ultimately that's what it does. Mm-hmm. You know, my goal is to try to cultivate good books.
Yeah.
So that the brand has a reputation that people want to read the stories.
Yeah.
We have seen that the orders of our number twos have gone up with this gap policy.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, and I think like the biggest example of this was a book we had come out about 6 months ago called Black Cotton, where the initial orders were okay, but the book sold out because the retailers underestimating the demand. We had a second printing of it.
Yeah.
And then when number two came out, the initial orders on number two were actually higher than the orders for number one, because all the retailers had realized there was a hit on their hands. So, you know, rather than artificially cutting their orders by, you know, 50% to preemptively make sure that they didn't have too many copies, they actually all increased their orders. So like without that gap, that would have never happened. Oh. So, you know, you can see it coming into practice there. There, sure. They would have ordered number one, number two, and sometimes they even have to order the third issue of a series before the first one comes out. So like that's what's totally crazy about this. And, you know, there's a lot of problems with like how the direct market works in the system. And so, you know, at Scout, we're trying to best figure our way around some of, you know, like the way the market currently works and the way the market has been done for a long time and try to find new paradigms that might actually make more sense in terms of, you know, practical business models. You know, and for me coming from Kickstarter, where I've had some really good success, you know, I'm trying to bring some of those practices to Scout. To see, you know, see if I can build a creator community at Scout to see, you know, what we can do to support each other, both on social media and stores and whatnot. So, yeah.
No. And so you don't find that fans at all are like, I mean, because I would imagine there's like first issue, then there's like a 2 month gap or something. And then it picks up after that, like where it goes to like month to month. You don't find like a loss of momentum or anything like that. I mean, it sounds like that just doesn't happen, right?
Well, I think, you know, I'll speak. I think this is a model that works better for Scout.
Okay.
Than would say work for Marvel.
Okay.
Because, you know, Marvel, you have these rabid Marvel fans, right? Who are buying anything that Marvel puts out. And if there's something that's new and exciting, you know, like they're looking at like their 10 Marvel titles out of the 20 that they're going to buy, right? And then so they're figuring out what they're going to do.
Yeah.
We don't have as many books that we're putting out. So, you know, for better or worse, the people who buy our books are often the fans of those books.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to cultivate a bigger audience.
Yeah.
But this gives the fans of those books a better chance to talk to their stores to make sure they get the issues. So, I think it probably does kill a little bit of momentum. But on the flip side, it gives, you know, the people who want those books a better chance of having them in the shops.
Sure.
And again, it's like that promotional window where I can spend the next month or so talking about my book before, you know, and say, hey, look, you can, if you got picked up number one today, tell your shop, you can, you know, make sure they order number two for you.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, we didn't have before, because it would basically be like, if you like the book, tell your shop to order number four for you, which doesn't make any sense. Right.
Yeah.
So we really haven't seen, you know, too many detriments to it. And it's really like I said, across the line, the orders from number twos have gone up. And as much as, you know, personally, I care about the end user.
Yeah.
As a publisher, your customers are the stores.
Yeah.
You know, because if the stores don't order the books, there's no way for people to actually buy them.
Sure.
So like you have to sort of put your mindset in, you know, you have to cater to the shops so the fans can actually get the books.
Yeah.
So if that makes sense, it's a different paradigm than, you know, I think the creators think, because the creators think, I'm trying to make a book or a cover that's going to appeal to my fan base. Yeah. And, you know, I have to re-educate them and say, no, you have to make a cover that the retailer is going to order, because if they order it, your fans can't get the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, versus Kickstarter, you know, where you're going direct to the fans. And so you want something that speaks to your people.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's a different thing. You know, people who love White Ash, who have been with us, you know, through all the different issues, you know, I can, there's certain shortcuts in terms of the language or the characters that I can highlight. I don't need to have something that's, you know, generic or generically sexy or generically provocative in some way that will make the retailer, when they're going through 1,000 books in the catalog, say, oh, I'll order two more of those because I can think I can sell it.
Yeah.
Right. So you can be more targeted on Kickstarter versus in the direct market, where you have to target what you think will sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to sell the story.
Wow. That's fascinating. It's interesting because, I mean, I remember our last interview, we talked a lot about your success on Kickstarter and how important how much of a success, you know, White Ash has been there. And honestly, like out of, you know, the creators that I know and I've interviewed, I mean, White Ash always seems to do really well on Kickstarter. But when we had our chat last time, one of the things you emphasized was like, you know, I had asked you about your partnership with Scout Comics or why you wanted to get, you know, go with a publisher when you were doing so well on Kickstarter. And, you know, one of the things you had said was like, look, it's one thing to be on Kickstarter and have your audience there, but it's kind of another thing to go to, you know, to have your books in shops and have people know that they're out there and then they can just kind of like pick it up and have it be accessible to like people who are interested in, you know, developing movies or TV shows or properties and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, there are two very different markets.
Yeah.
That people are, you know, are buying books. So one is not cannibalizing the other.
Yeah.
You know, it's if you were to look at a film and say, hey, we're just distributing this film in the United States, but we're not doing foreign, that would be crazy, right? Because you'd be leaving all this money on the table. It's the same thing with Kickstarter. There are people who pretty much exclusively buy comics through Kickstarter.
Really?
And there are, yeah.
Wow.
Like, I mean, and that's their main source for comics because the kind of comics that are on Kickstarter speak more to who they are.
Sure.
You know, or they might not have a local comic shop. You know, not all of us are lucky enough like I do to live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Where, you know, every time you turn around, there's you know, two other comic book shops springing up.
Yeah.
You know, some people have a 50-mile drive or more to get to a comic book shop. So, you know, if that's the kind of thing, you know, maybe you like the relationship with comics on Kickstarter. So, you know, take Glarian, which was what my last Kickstarter project, which was, you know, it's a White Ash spinoff because like for me, I'm just trying to build that universe out as big as I can. We had 1700 backers on Kickstarter, which is a really great number for Kickstarter. I mean, it's a tremendous number. And of those though, you know, say, I think probably about 550 or so were digital backers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how many are actually getting the physical book? So it's 1100. A lot of those are overseas. So now we're going down to how many people who are, you know, are in the United States who are getting the book, you know, getting a physical copy of that book, you know, it's probably closer to like 700 people.
Yeah.
You know, and then how many of those people actually go to comic book shops? I would bet, you know, roughly half of them don't go to comic book shops.
Yeah.
So now you're talking about a book that was a huge hit on Kickstarter that, you know, you put out 350 copies of that maybe take away from the direct market. But probably some of those people will buy the direct market version because they're collectors or completists.
Sure.
So, you know, for something that was a tremendous, huge hit on Kickstarter, you know, maybe that's 200 sales in the direct market that you're not getting.
Yeah.
Which is nothing, because in the direct market, you know, if your first issue sells less than 3,000 copies, you know, the series is going to have trouble doing well.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and I'm talking about maybe losing 200 sales from something that was one of the biggest single issue hits ever on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so when you look at most people whose projects range anywhere from like 300 to 800 backers, you know, you're probably talking 100 sales lost, which is, you know, statistically insignificant in terms of what you're trying to do in the direct market.
Yeah.
So it's two completely different markets that don't have, you know, too much bearing on the other, and you have to market books differently in both of them.
Yeah.
So for me, I love that, you know, like, but what's been really interesting is seeing how White Ash performs in different places. Like, it's a huge hit on Kickstarter. Like, I have a big following there.
Yeah.
In the direct market through Scout, it's a harder sell. And I don't know if it's just because fantasy, you know, people think it's high fantasy or it's rather grounded fantasy, or it's the Scout branding or whatever it is. It does well, but it doesn't have the same level of excitement.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's Scout titles that do better. There's Scout titles that do a little bit worse. You know, it does okay.
Yeah.
Now, we just, you know, this, as I said, the trade just came out, and it's part of our initial Simon & Schuster bookstore deal. It's doing incredible there. You know, so it's one of our best sellers, if not the best seller.
Wait, what is that deal, the Simon & Schuster?
So Scout Comics, So Scout Comics has a distribution deal through Simon & Schuster.
Oh, well, okay.
Which means, so we have a bookstore distribution deal. No, so this isn't a, so in addition to the trade coming out, like in comic book shops, and you can, you know, that came out, we distribute through Diamond and Lunar to comic book shops.
Sure.
So, so you can go to your local comic book shop and pick up the White Ash trade or tell them to order it, but you can also go to Barnes & Noble. You can, you know, if you go to Amazon, it's in all those places because, you know, it's in college bookstores because, Simon & Schuster distributes through there. And that's, you know, and so it's been really interesting to see is the trade has done really well. You know, it's like, you know, our best selling trade, in that market.
Sure.
But you know, as a comic, it does well in the direct market and it kills on Kickstarter. So you see things doing differently in different markets.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out, you know, how am I reaching people better here or not as well there? And I think ultimately it's a, you know, White Ash is a book who speaks to readers.
Yeah.
And I think the comic book market in some ways is often driven by collectors.
Sure.
And the bookstore market's back to readers.
Yeah.
So, you know, readers are really, so if you're a reader and you're listening to this podcast and you like grounded fantasy, if you like The Magicians, if you like, you know, even Harry Potter a little bit, you know, it starts out in our world and then goes, you know, and the world starts expanding as the magic creeps in. You know, I think you'd really like White Ash and it's worth checking out because you can get the whole first arc now in that trade.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember, I mean, the way that you've done things has always been really, really intelligently done, because I think of the way I discovered you was like an ad and maybe like an Alterna press book or something. And it was like, hey, go here and check this out for free. And I think you had to email or something, and I may have emailed and sent an email and then gotten like a PDF of the first issue or something, or like, I don't remember like how I came across it, but I remember it was in a publication that I did not expect to see it in. And just, you know, Connor Hughes's art, I think it was the cover with, you know, the character and she has a bow, there's a guy behind her or something like that. And she's like wearing a black cat jumpsuit, you know, like sort of, and I just remember being like, this looks interesting. And so I'm wondering, you know, I mean, it's weird to me that it would be a tough sell in this market because you've got such great artists and colorists and stuff like that. And we all know that the visual in comics, you know, that kind of helps sell it, right? I mean, once they pick up the book and they're, you know, they get sucked in by your writing. But, you know, Connor's art is like, for me, was like a big selling point, like when I saw that ad. And so I'm curious about like,
To your question, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, you're right. It was an Alterna thing. I was when I first was bringing White Ash to comics and trying to figure out how to gain a foothold, I was looking at lots of different places.
Yeah.
And Alterna back in the day basically had a sweetheart deal where you could advertise in the eight of their comics for something like $200.
Yeah, I remember.
I was like, great, I'll try it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as you know, this is one of the things that I'm fortunate in a position now where I can try to help other people.
Yeah.
And I can help guide them in terms of what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And when I was coming to the direct market, you know, like I said, White Ash had been very successful on Kickstarter. I started thinking about like, how should we differentiate what we're doing through Scout versus what we're doing on Kickstarter? And I don't know if that was necessarily the right instinct.
Uh-huh.
But the thought process, this is the thought process. Like, let's do something a little bit different. Gideon Falls had just come out, and Jeff Lemire had done, and all the covers of that were these really cool graphic design-y covers featuring parts of the town. And I thought, why don't we try to do something like that with White Ash?
Yeah.
So for the first issue of White Ash, rather than really focusing on the characters, Connor and I came up with this idea of focusing on the town and the big White Ash tree. So in retrospect, the cover of your first issue that came out through Scout, which features a big tree.
Yeah.
Not as exciting as featuring an elf with a bow.
Yeah. You know, no, I mean, it's funny because I mean, that is one of there is a bit of a, I don't know. It's like a weird thing where it's like, oh, there is a very attractive elf character on the cover of the comics, but you don't want to be that guy who's like, you know, because I'm not into like the TNA comics and stuff like that. But I will admit that that cover, you know, the original one, I was like, hey, what is that? And it wasn't just the fact that it was like, you know, this woman in a cat suit with a bow or whatever. It's just that the art to me was executed in a way where I was just like, oh, I think I'll like this. Like, if this is the representation of what's on the inside, then I'm going to like this, you know. But I do have to admit, as a boring cis white, you know, dude, that I looked at that and I was like, that's kind of sexy. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think there's a difference between exploitive and sexy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And a part of it's the perspective that you showcase something in. But, you know, at the end of the day, a cover is a sales tool.
Sure.
And I love the cover that Connor did for White Ash number one. And it's a beautiful cover and it's very graphic design-y. And I think it brought in some of the right people.
Sure.
You know, who want to read the book, but it didn't bring in as many people as it could have brought in. So like there's always things like that where you're trying to play with how do I sell something versus how do I sell something that's intrinsic to the story that you're trying to tell, but also how do I just sell it?
Yeah.
And so you have to play with those things in your mind and figure out what works and what doesn't work. So like, that was a mistake that I think I did in the first one. Like, even without having, you know, Lillian on the cover, there were other ways that we could have gone about it.
Sure.
Versus featuring a tree.
Yeah.
The second mistake, the second mistake that I made, you know, when I first brought it is I was trying to do something, you know, basically when I told the stories on Kickstarter initially, I was telling them for the, you know, making writing each story to the length that I wanted it to be written.
Yeah.
Versus trying to think about, you know, what's the standard in the direct market, whether it's 20 pages or 22 pages or whatnot. So the first issue of White Ash is a huge 52-page book that I put out on Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
And it ends with a twist. You know, it was built to end with a twist that gets you to want to buy the second issue.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I thought the story's about, oh my God, the story's about this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When I brought it to Scout, you know, back then there was a lot of talk. They're like, well, you know, like 52 is obviously too long for a first issue. So can we break it up?
Yeah.
And me not really having the foresight to say, okay, but the hook for the series is at the end of this issue. I said, yeah, let's break it up into two.
Yeah.
And I turned that 52 page first issue into two, like one's a 26 page and one's a 28 page issue.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I added a couple new pages. I was thinking I was doing something neat. But what I did was I undercut, you know, my own narrative form.
Mm-hmm.
And so that great hook, which I thought was fine, people just get in the second issue. I wasn't thinking they have to get it in the first issue.
Yeah.
Because if they don't get it in the first issue, they're not coming back for the second issue.
Yeah.
And so like I still created a bit of an artificial cliffhanger. In the first issue, but it wasn't anywhere near as strong as what came at the end of issue two. Sure. And so talking to a lot of people, you know, later on, they read the first issue, liked it, but never got around to reading the second issue. And then they heard people talking about it and they're like, oh, I guess I'll go back and pick it up. And then they read the second issue and they're like, oh, this is what the series is about. And then they went on. So I think we lost a lot of people who didn't get to that hook.
Yeah.
So, I'm very cognizant of that is, you know, when we're taking something that's maybe been on Kickstarter or adapting it from a different medium to make sure we don't lose those beats.
Yeah.
And say, look, you know what? We can have some flexibility. And, you know, and so like the first issue, like, again, now that I'm co-publisher, I can help make some of these decisions. But like the first issue of White Ash that's coming back is a 44-page issue.
Yeah.
Because that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I feel like it tells the story. And I'm actually doing oversized issues for almost all of this run.
Oh, that's...
Like the second issue is 28 pages, which is still really oversized for the comic book market.
Yeah.
The third issue is 32 pages. So like that's of story. That's not of ads. That's just story pages.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like the first issue is 44 story pages. The second one is 28 story pages. The third one is 32 story pages. These are all big issues, compared to like the 18 or 19, 20 pages that Marvel puts out.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I'm doing, because I think that's what best serves this story.
Sure.
And so, you know, and so Scouts also started to do some, like, there's a great one shot that's coming out right now called Commander Rao.
Yeah.
From this artist named Fellhound. And that's also like a 44-page book.
Oh, wow.
Boom. That's out. So we're making sure that if a creator needs those extra pages, we're not trying to tell them that you've got to tell your story in 20 to 22 pages because that's the cheapest thing to
print. That's great. It's like Netflix. If your story needs to be an hour, then it gets to be an hour or 45 minutes or whatever, right?
Yeah. Like, your story should be the length that your story is.
Sure. That's great.
You know, because at the end of the day, the reason why things are 20 pages or 22 pages or 18 pages is that's what worked in the 1960s.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, to be able to get the book out on time, to have an artist be able to draw, you know, they figured, okay, they can draw 5 pages a week.
Yeah.
Maybe 5.5 pages, you know, like, so that's why it was that. And we could print it at this cost and this is what it would be, you know, and we don't have to be 1960s Marvel.
Yeah.
We are a creator owner imprint at Scout. And so, like, this is what I'm doing with White Ash. And I encourage creators to write more to the page count that makes sense for their story, unless they're planning to take it to a publisher that has very strict guidelines in terms of what they put out.
Sure.
And some do, you know, like, that's not to say, you know, and you will be cutting yourselves out from some places if you have a 27-page issue, a 31-page issue, a 16-page issue, you know, like that, that's not helpful for you as a creator, unless you think about that ahead of time. But on Kickstarter, if you're going to Kickstarter, I encourage you to write the story that best fits your work.
Yeah. Oh, wow. No, I mean, that's great. I mean, we've talked so much about the publishing stuff. I mean, I want to talk about the content of your book. But I mean, you mentioned earlier that it's, and that's great. Like, because I know that with my own, like, little hobby book, you know, I'm like, it's got to be 21 pages, 22, you know what I mean? And then you've got to fit in. So, like, to just speak to creators and be like, just tell the story that you want to tell and break it up how you want to break it up. I mean, that's very liberating, kind of, in a way, right? Like, for creators. And I mean, do you get any sort of, like, I mean, I would imagine that younger creators are probably, like, cool with that. Maybe, like, old guys like me might be like, oh, really? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I never thought about it that way.
Well, I think also, you know, it depends on how you write.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're working with creators who have worked in Marvel and DC, I think they're predisposed to already think of, you know, their story arcs in 20 or 22 page chunks.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this, you know, this is advice to anyone who's looking to tell a story. You know, all the same things need to be there. You need to have, you know, the emotion, you need to have the turning points, you need to have character arcs. And if you're doing, you know, something sequentialized, you need to have cliffhangers.
Yeah.
You know, to get people to come back to the next story. But the length of how those things play out, I think, should be intrinsic to the story you're telling. You know, that said, if you're doing a 12-page story, you know, that's not really going to work with a publisher, right?
Sure.
They can't turn around and look to get it. Like, and just, you know, and I will also say, if you're doing a one shot, a 20-page one shot is not a great length to submit to a publisher.
Sure.
You know, because that's a little too short.
Yeah.
If you're doing a one shot. But if you're doing, you know, something sequential, I mean, you should look at, you know, 20 pages being your minimum.
Yeah.
And, you know, feel free to play if it needs to be a little bit longer. If, you know, especially if you're on Kickstarter, longer books sell. If you're doing something, you know, if you're looking to submit something to Scout, you know, we have some flexibility.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, let me go back to your book, White Ash.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, no, I mean, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was, and it's funny, breaking up the first issue, because as soon as you mentioned that, and I very much remember the first issue, because, again, like I've said, this is kind of like one of my favorite independent books that I've read. I mean, it's consistently, the artwork is consistently great. The writing is consistently great. Like, this is definitely one of those things where it's like, oh, Charlie's doing a Kickstarter. I've either got to get the physical or digital or, you know, whatever I can do at that during that time period. And I've got to keep up with this story because I love this book. I mean, there's just no other way of saying it. But it's funny to me when you were talking about breaking up that first issue, my reaction in my brain is like, no, don't do that. Because I remember the very distinct experience of reading your first issue and being like, oh, this is kind of like an interesting story. And I mean, you've kind of already spilled it a bit saying it lives in like this fantasy universe. So I'm not ruining anything. And it's been out for a while, but that turn at the first issue made me go like, oh, wait, what is this? This is more like of a, and you know, just using a comparison, you know, something, this is more like of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer feel than what I thought it was. Like, you know, at first I thought it was one thing and maybe like a slice of life, like sort of book or like, you know, drama. And then you get to the end and you're like, oh, wait. And there's hints of it, but throughout the book, but when you get to the end, it's like, oh, wait, this is something completely different. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like that's kind of how it was structured was I wanted to give people the chance to get to know the characters and the world, because I mean, a big part of the story is the main character, all of a sudden realizes, oh my goodness, you know, this world that what I thought White Ash was is not who I thought I was. I am not.
And the reader too, right?
So you got to experience that moment along with the main character.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, both of you go through that, like, oh my, wait, what does this mean about what I just read or who I am?
Sure.
And I think it really worked.
Yeah.
So I basically undercut my own moment. So that's not something I'd recommend to other people.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, it's just funny because my instinct was like, and you know, God knows I'm not somebody to take advice from, but if you had come to me with that, I would have been like, no, do not break it up. Like, do not do that. Do not, because I mean, again, the book is beautiful and it's really well told, but it is that thing at the end that for fantasy fans, you know, and you know, let's admit, like a lot of comic fans, we are into fantasy, superheroes, horror, like that sort of thing. And White Ash has all of these things in spades, right? Like romance, horror, action, you know, it, and a little bit of Lord of the Rings in there. Like, I remember being like, oh, this is, and it was cool, right? Like, I didn't feel like I was tricked. I was just like, this is cool. You guys totally suckered me because I thought it was one thing and very much like your lead character. And you did it in such a great way because you're the reader and you feel like you're going along with it and you're identifying with these characters and you're kind of like, huh, where's this going? And then by the end, you're like, just like the lead guy, you're like, oh, this is not what I thought it was at all, kind of, and which is very cool. And which is why people should pick up White Ash.
Well, thank you. I also think it's why, if any creators are listening to this, you need to stick to your guns.
Yeah.
And you know your story better than anyone does. And honestly, this was, you know, and I don't blame Scout for this.
Oh, of course.
You know, it was just one of those things where they're like, hey, it would be better for us if it wasn't this 52-page issue. And it was me trying to be the team player and saying, all right, I guess I could break it up. We could do something like this. And again, in retrospect, looking back, I probably said, you know what? It's a great idea, but I'd rather lose a little revenue if we have to spend more on this issue, because I really think we're going to hook more readers and, you know, long term, the series will do better.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's important to speak up like that.
Yeah.
You know, as a creator, because you know your own book. And so that's one of the things, like as co-publisher now, I try to advocate for creators and their stories to make sure they know they're being supported in terms of what they're trying to do with their vision.
Sure.
But I'm also really excited now that White Ash is coming back. You know, Connor, who I work with, the artist, is incredible. Finn is great for setting the emotional tone.
Yeah.
With everything with the colors and the stuff that they're both doing right now is some of the best work they've ever done. Like I feel like these new issues are so good.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting for me. I think for any of us who have been writers to see these things come to life. But the longer you live with characters, and this is what you get to do when you have a longer running series, you know, the better the art team starts to know those characters, their poses, the more well-rounded they become from a artistic perspective. Not just, you know, as a writer, you know them better, but as an artist, they start to know these people better, how they stand, the world they inhabit, what the other characters are like, how they interact. So I'm seeing that in addition to everything else that's going on. So like Connor's art has just leveled up.
Yeah.
And Finn is just incredible, buttressing everything that Connor does and making it better, you know, making sure it's clear or the right emotional tone.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because I was comparing the original, because I have all that stuff, you know, and I was looking at the beginning, you know, of White Ash versus like the new chapter that's coming out, and also, you know, scrolling through some of the other PDFs that I have. And I was just like, wow. Like, I mean, Connor, I thought Connor was great in the beginning, but it's interesting how the style has changed. Lines have become thicker, like maybe emotions have become more demonstrative. Like his skill for like laying out backgrounds and all that stuff was great in the beginning, but it's, you know, just so much detail. There always was detail, but there's definitely something that's changed as the book has gone along, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, again, like I said, he knows the world better.
Yeah.
And he's just a better artist.
Yeah.
I mean, Connor, I found, you know, I was lucky enough to find Connor when his career was just getting started.
Uh-huh.
He had gone to the School of Visual Design in New York to be a comic artist. And then rather than trying to do that right after college, he got a job at the UN being one of their in-house graphic designers.
Nice.
So he did that for a while. I mean, he was incredibly talented. And then, you know, he got to a point where he was like, you know what, I'm going to try to give this comic book thing a try. And so he applied for the first Mark Millar Talent Showcase.
Oh, yeah.
And he was one of the winners of that. But, you know, and this is where it's so important to have a good colorist. Uh-huh. And not just a good colorist, but a colorist that's the right fit for the book.
Sure.
They paired him with someone who was not a good fit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like the work that I saw there in that show, you know, I've seen in retrospect, looking back, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It didn't showcase who he was or who he could be as an artist.
Sure.
And nothing happened for him. Yeah. And then, you know, I put out a post on Reddit and DeviantArt and a couple other places. I forget which one he contacted me through. And I saw his line work. And when I was looking for an artist for White Ash, I was talking with one of my oldest friends who's an animation director.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were sort of chatting, casually going through the samples. And he's like, yeah, this one's not bad. This one's, and he's like, wait, who's this guy?
Yeah.
He's like, look at the storytelling here. It's incredible. You know, who is this person? Who is this Connor Hughes? And, you know, he really hadn't done much, but he was this incredibly talented, considerate, thoughtful artist who, you know, just needed a showcase.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I was looking for with White Ash was someone who could, you know, tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, who didn't just do the angry face or the sexy face for every character, you know, where the posing was important, where, you know, the characters all felt well-rounded, where you had people of different shapes and sizes and, you know, races and genders. And that's something he was looking for too. He just didn't want to do the generic superhero thing. He wanted something that was interesting where he could really throw himself into. And so, you know, so he did, but, you know, there's a period of breaking in where you're figuring out what the style is going to be. And so if you look at like the early White Ash, you know, the first issue to the stuff that we're doing now, the characters have evolved.
Yeah.
But I think like the style is definitely set now.
Yeah.
And it looks so good. I mean, and
yeah.
So
it definitely does. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, you know, and I didn't get a chance to chat with you, like with the launch of Glarian too, was like, I mean, White Ash is, I mean, it's not like, how do you phrase these sort of things? It's not like an adult book, but there's definitely kind of like adult elements to it where there's like a little bit of violence and blood. Cause you've got, I mean, is it okay for me to say that there's vampires in it? I mean,
well, yeah. So like, yeah, I mean, I think the best way of saying it And yeah. I like to say, you know, the lead characters are PG-13 characters.
Sure.
Living in a PG-13 world.
Yeah.
Who occasionally run into R-rated characters.
Sure.
Great. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a cross. So like that. And I think one of the things that, you know, you go back to Buffy.
Yeah.
That Buffy did so well was you felt like you were in, you know, this teeny bopper universe where everything's all peachy keen and the characters are having a good time and they're going on an adventure and then something horrible happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like real horror that undercuts this, you know, this happy bubble.
Yeah.
Right? Which is just like real life. You know, we all live in our own little bubbles until something tragic happens.
Yeah.
And I think when you're doing that in storytelling, it makes those tragic elements hit a little harder versus being in a world that, you know, like everything is dark and, you know, and people are dying left and right and there's F-bombs.
Sure.
And, you know, like, so it makes these moments hit a little bit harder.
Yeah.
It makes these characters a little bit more evil. That said, Glarion, which is a spinoff, and I mean, it's a spinoff / prequel. And Glarion is Lillian's mother. She's an R-rated character.
Yeah.
Because she's a little bit more primal. You know, she lives life more in the moment. And, you know, so for that story is a little bit more of an R-rated story.
Oh.
Because it's intrinsic to that character.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, like that opens and there's some nudity in that book and there's some sexual situations. But they're intrinsic to the story of that character and they're kind of shaping who that character is going to become.
Sure.
Because these are like the tales of, you know, of her early days. And, you know, when you open on someone's, you know, like in the process of, you know, so, you know, being in that teen period where you're sowing all your wild oats and figuring out who you're going to be as a person sexually, you know, in terms of what your ideals are, what you believe in, what, you know, what direction you're going to go in. Like that's such a formative stage. So that's, you know, it's about that character going from that to becoming something more fully formed.
Sure.
So it's important to show that stuff for that character's journey.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. No, I was just wondering because, you know, when I went to support Glarion, I saw some of what was coming up. And then obviously when I got the book, I was like, oh, hey, you know, but I've seen some of the sort of stuff in your previews and, you know, it's a bit titillating, but was it just like when you decided to do a spinoff of that character, like that's kind of just the way the story was going to go? Or did you want to stretch some more muscles and like break free of the confines of PG-13? Like what were you sort of, I mean, is it a dumb question to be like, what were you thinking, but like, you know, what were you thinking when you went to do the spinoff? Because it's definitely something like White Ash is probably something that now I could hand off to my daughter, maybe not now, maybe in a year or whatever, and be like, hey, check this out. This is really cool. Strong female characters. But, you know, as I am a liberal dad, but there's definitely limits. Glarion is not, you know. And so were you concerned at all about like the boundaries that you were pushing? And were you thinking like, oh, you understand where I'm going with that?
Sure. Yeah. So, no, I think it's like, I always try to tell the story the way the story needs to be told.
Sure.
You know, I think like, there, you know, we're getting into some, I mean, like it also like on the flip side, like Glarion for those people who, you know, who don't know why it's basically told in two different stories. It's told through the eyes of a young woman named Rachel in 1970s New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then also through the eyes of this elf Glarion, you know, like 3000 years ago in Alfheim. And, you know, the both stories are very adult, but like, you know, what Rachel is dealing with is she's dealing with, you know, a trauma with a miscarriage and, you know, and just like how her life has fallen apart after this horrific fire that happened at the hospital where she worked.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's juxtaposed with these visions she's having of, you know, of Glarion, you know, 3000 years ago, and you know, those two stories are eventually going to come together. But, you know, Rachel's story is just as adult,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just a different kind of adult. And so I think, you know, intrinsically that story is about, you know, these different key moments in life that shape you and form you. And how these two different women who are dealing with different types of trauma are linked. And you'll see eventually how they are linked, you know, over the course of that series. So it's more of an adult story. And I never want to be kind of limited and sort of bound, you know, boxed in by saying something has to be a certain rating. You know, if I was trying to maximize my sales in the direct market, sure, like that's the other thing, I probably would keep everything PG-13.
Sure.
Maybe even like 12 plus.
Sure.
Because like the YA market in, you know, bookstores is the biggest thing right now.
Yeah.
And Glarian is definitely not YA. And White Ash maybe even sometimes is in the upper range of YA.
Yeah.
You know, because there is a little bit of language, but I think like I said, so it's important for me to tell the story and not be limited by thinking I can't do this or I can do this.
Sure.
But I think when you do these things, you need to make choices about how you're going to tell those things. So, yeah, like for Galarian, because I knew I was getting to some of that territory, I brought in, you know, I wanted to make sure I was working with a female artist.
Yeah.
Because how a woman draws another woman in a sexual situation is different than how a man's going to do that.
Sure.
I brought in Melissa White to be my editor. That way, you know, it's like I want to get as many female perspectives on something like that to make sure that, you know, I think it's fine for anyone to write about anything.
Yeah.
But you need to do it in a way that's respectful.
Sure.
You need to do it through the right lens.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm actually just launching another Kickstarter very soon.
Oh.
Which is, you know, it's a very big departure from White Ash, from anything I've done before. Like the basic log line is that is, you know, How to Get Away with Murder meets House of Cards meets The Girlfriend Experience.
Huh.
So, you know, like that's also more of an adult thriller.
Sure.
And I'm making sure like that's also an all female team working on that book with me.
Oh, nice.
So like I try to take those things into account.
Yeah.
I never want to limit myself in terms of the story or the type of content that I can tell. But when you talk about like, do you consider these things? I definitely consider these things and try to make sure that I'm telling a version of that story that I feel good about.
Yeah.
And you know, and like I said, buttressing yourself with people who have different perspectives who can say, okay, this is a great idea. This is not a great idea. This feels empowering. This feels exploitive. And I think if you're doing that in that kind of considered way, you should feel comfortable telling the story you want to tell.
Sure. Sure. And so I would imagine that just Kickstarter gives you that freedom. I mean, is Galarian something that Scout Comics might be releasing in the future as well, or?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, that's my plan. My plan is to do Galarian all through Kickstarter first, and then, you know, ideally, you know, it also helps have White Ash content coming out continuously through Scout.
Yeah.
So this next arc of White Ash will carry roughly through June, July, depending on, you know, how quickly, you know, whether things are delayed or not.
Yes. Yeah.
So assume everything, you know, through Scout would be coming out through July, and then there would be a trade later on that year. So in the beginning of 2023,
yeah,
would, you know, roughly a year and a half from now, we could hopefully have a 5-issue Galarian series that comes out through Scout. That way, you know, there's White Ash content. Then it gives Connor and Finn a chance to catch up on the next White Ash arc. So then when, you know, that arc finishes, we can then roll into, you know, the third arc of White Ash, and people still feel like they've had a lot of White Ash content and haven't had to wait a year and a half for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds great. I mean, so for people who know what White Ash is, what can they, I mean, was that first issue kickstarted of like, what are we calling it? Season 2, chapter 2, volume 2?
So the it's season 2, number 1.
Yeah.
It's really a jumping on point.
Oh, okay.
For anyone new to White Ash. Because it's designed that way to,
gotcha,
to catch everyone up very quickly.
Sure.
So if you haven't read White Ash before, I mean, obviously I'd say pick up the trade.
Yeah.
It's a great trade. It's available everywhere.
You should.
But if not, you can probably catch up pretty quickly just reading this first issue, because the first couple of pages definitely sum up where everything's at. And to answer the other question, yes, this particular issue was on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But this is an expanded version of this issue. There's some new pages that we've added in. So it's an even longer version of that issue.
Nice.
With, you know, some killer new covers. There's even a cosplay cover that Pulp 716 is doing.
Oh, wow.
That's
I did see that.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And again, not the Dynamite style cosplay cover.
I know.
It's more of a fun, playful cosplay cover.
Sure. No, I totally understand.
Felt good about.
That's so funny that that's what you went to right
away. Well, like, because when you say cosplay cover with comics, I think it paints a picture in someone's mind of you know, a character with little to no outfit on the cover of a book. And that's not kind of what I was looking to do for this. So it's a fun, really fun cosplay cover.
Yeah.
So all the issues that are coming out after this have not been on Kickstarter. So that's, you know, it's very different with this arc. So if you are a White Ash fan and you followed on Kickstarter, you know, we eventually will be putting together a nice hardcover on Kickstarter, maybe next summer, late next summer, that you can catch up if you just want to do the Kickstarter thing. But if you want to get the issues as quickly as you can, and obviously, you know, getting issues from your comic book shop is often cheaper than getting them on Kickstarter. So if you're a single issue person, get them through your comic shop and then, you know, pick up the hardcover later on.
Sure. No, that's great. Well, you know, I mean, I have to say, I love White Ash. I love what I've seen, you know, so far. I love Galarian. I love White Ash. I mean, I have been continually impressed by your work. I mean, I appreciate you slumming with me on this fine Saturday morning in Los Angeles.
Please.
but I mean, any final things you want to say before we sign off? I mean, I've had you on for like about an hour, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you're a very busy guy. I mean, for goodness sakes, making your own comics, co-publisher of Scout Comics. Any final things that you just want to get to that we didn't touch on?
Well, like I said, you know, White Ash is coming out. I believe it's going to be December 1st now.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I also want to say, look out for HISMWTC #1, which is coming to Kickstarter really soon.
Okay.
A brand new series. And then there'll be more Galarian next year. Got another book coming out next year, also called The Game. So there's a lot in the pipeline.
Oh, The Game.
So give me a follow on Twitter and you can keep up. I'm at Charles Stickney there. You can see all that I've got going on in the White Ash universe. I'm also always happy to chat Kickstarter or Scout Comics with anyone who has any questions.
Well, thank you for chatting with me. I appreciate your time. Again, I know you're a busy man. Hopefully we will be able to see each other at a convention when we all feel comfortable with conventions again.
Yes.
But in the meantime, the book is called White Ash. It is, the trade paperback is available now, but through Scout Comics. The first issue of Chapter 2, Book 2, Season 2, will be out in early December. And the man's name is Charlie Stickney. The artist name is Connor Hughes. The colorist is Finn Cram. And my name is Christian Horn. And this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Check out White Ash, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.